scarred hand to me. The shape of it was normal, but the skin... It looked like it had been swirled and smudged and rippled. Burns. They must have been horrific if even their immortal blood had not been able to heal them. The leather plates of his light armor flowed over most of it, held by a loop around his middle finger. Not to conceal, I realized as his hand breached the chill night air between us. No, it was to hold in place the large, depthless cobalt stone that graced the back of the gauntlet. A matching one lay atop his left hand, and twin red stones adorned Cassian's gauntlets, their color like the slumbering heart of a flame. I took Azrael's hand, and his rough fingers squeezed mine. His skin was as cold as his face. But the word Cassian had used a moment ago snagged my attention as I released his hand and tried not to look too eager to step back to Rhys's side. Your brothers? The Illyrians looked similar, but only in the way that people who had come from the same place did. Rhysand clarified,
Brothers in the sense that all bastards are brothers of a sort.
I'd never thought of it that way. And you? I asked Cassian. Cassian shrugged, wings tucking in tighter.
I command Rhys's armies.
As if such a position were something that one shrugged off. And armies. Rhys had armies. I shifted on my feet. Cassian's hazel eyes tracked the movement, his mouth twitching to the side, and I honestly thought he was about to give me his professional opinion on how doing so would make me unsteady against an opponent when Azrael clarified.
Cassian also excels at pissing everyone off, especially amongst our friends. So as a friend of Rhysand, good luck.
A friend of Rhysand. Not savior of their land, not murderer, not human fairy thing. Maybe they didn't know. But Cassian nudged his bastard brother whatever out of the way, Azrael's mighty wings flaring slightly as he balanced himself.
How the hell did you make that bone ladder in the Midengard worm's lair when you looked like your own bones can snap at any moment?
Well, that settled that, and the question of whether he'd been under the mountain. But where he'd been instead? Another mystery. Perhaps here, with these people. Safe and coddled. I met Cassian's gaze, if only because having Rhysand defend me might very well make me crumble a bit more. And maybe it made me as mean as an adder. Maybe I relished being one, but I said, How the hell did you manage to survive this long without anyone killing you? Cassian tipped his head back and laughed, a full, rich sound that bounced off the ruddy stones of the house. Azrael's brows flicked up with approval as the shadows seemed to wrap tighter around him, as if he were the dark hive from which they flew and returned. I tried not to shudder and faced Rhys, hoping for an explanation about his spymaster's dark gifts. Rhys's face was blank, but his eyes were wary, assessing. I almost demanded what the hell he was looking at, until Moore breezed onto the balcony with,
If Cassian's howling, I hope it means Farah told him to shut his fat mouth.
Both Illyrians turned toward her, Cassian bracing his feet slightly farther apart on the floor in a fighting stance I knew all too well. It was almost enough to distract me from noticing Azrael as those shadows lightened and his gaze slid over Moore's body. A red flowing gown of chiffon accented with gold cuffs and combs fashioned like gilded leaves swept back the waves of her unbound hair. A wisp of shadow curled around Azrael's ear and his eyes snapped to mine. I schooled my face into bland innocence.
I don't know why I ever forgot you two are related,
Cassian told Moore, jerking his chin at Rhys, who rolled his eyes.
You two and your clothes.
Moore sketched a bow to Cassian. Indeed, I tried not to slump with relief at the sight of the fine clothes. At least I wouldn't look overdressed now.
I wanted to impress Feyre. You could have at least bothered to comb your hair.
Unlike some people, Cassian said, proving my suspicions correct about that biting stance. I have better things to do with my time than sit in front of the mirror for hours.
Yes,
Moore said, tossing her long hair over a shoulder.
Since swaggering around Valaris,
we have company,
was Azriel's soft warning, wings again spreading a bit as he herded them through the open balcony doors to the dining room. I could have sworn tendrils of darkness whirled in their wake. Moore patted Azriel on the shoulder as she dodged his outstretched wing. Relax, Az. No fighting tonight, we promised, Rhys. The lurking shadows vanished entirely as Azriel's head dipped a bit, his night dark hair sliding over his handsome face as if to shield him from that mercilessly beautiful grin. Moore gave no indication that she noticed and curved her fingers toward me.
Come sit with me while they drink.
I had enough dignity remaining not to look to Rhys for confirmation it was safe, so I obeyed, falling into step beside her as the two Illyrians drifted back to walk the few steps with their High Lord.
Unless you'd rather drink,
Moore offered as we entered the warmth and red stone of the dining room.
But I want you to myself before Amran hogs you.
The interior dining room doors opened on a whispering wind, revealing the shadowed crimson halls of the mountain beyond. And maybe part of me remained mortal, because even though the short, delicate woman looked like High Fae, as Rhys had warned me, every instinct was roaring to run, to hide. She was several inches shorter than me, her chin-length black hair glossy and straight, her skin tan and smooth, and her face pretty, bordering on plain, was bored, if not mildly irritated. But Amran's eyes? Her silver eyes were unlike anything I'd ever seen. A glimpse into the creature that I knew in my bones wasn't High Fae, or hadn't been born that way. The silver in Amran's eyes seemed to swirl like smoke under glass. She wore pants and a top like those I'd worn at the other mountain palace, both in shades of pewter and storm cloud, and pearls, white and gray and black, adorned her ears, fingers, and wrists. Even the High Lord at my side felt like a wisp of shadow compared to the power thrumming from her. Moore groaned, slumping into a chair near the end of the table, and poured herself a glass of wine. Cassian took a seat across from her, wiggling his fingers for the wine bottle. But Rhysand and Azriel just stood there watching, maybe monitoring, as the female approached me, then halted 3 feet away.
Your taste remains excellent, High Lord. Thank you.
Her voice was soft, but honed sharper than any blade I'd encountered. Her slim, small fingers grazed a delicate silver and pearl brooch pinned above her right breast. So that's who he'd bought the jewelry for. The jewelry I was to never, under any circumstances, try to steal. I studied Rhys and Amran, as if I might be able to read what further bond lay between them, but Rhysand waved a hand and bowed his head.
It suits you, Amran. Everything suits me, she said, and those horrible, enchanting eyes again met my own, like leashed lightning.
She took a step closer, sniffing delicately, and though I stood half a foot taller, I'd never felt meeker. But I held my chin up. I didn't know why, but I did. Amran said,
So there are two of us now.
My brows nudged toward each other. Amran's lips were a slash of red. We who were born something else and found ourselves trapped in new, strange bodies.
I decided I really didn't want to know what she'd been before. Amryn jerked her chin at me to sit in the empty chair beside Moore, her hair shifting like molten night. She claimed the seat across from me, Azriel on her other side, as Rhys took the one across from him, on my right. No one at the head of the table.
Though there is a third, Amryn said, now looking at Rhysand. I don't think you've heard from Miriam in centuries.
Interesting. Cassian rolled his eyes. Please, just get to the point, Amryn, I'm hungry. Moore choked on her wine.
Amryn slid her attention to the warrior to her right. Azriel, on her other side, monitored the two of them very, very carefully. No one warming your bed right now, Cassian? It must be so hard to be an Illyrian and have no thoughts in your head save for those about your favorite part.
You know, I'm always happy to tangle in the sheets with you, Amryn, Cassian said, utterly unfazed by the silver eyes, the power radiating from her every pore. I know how much you enjoy Illyrian. Miriam, Rhysand said, as Amryn's smile became serpentine.
And Draken are doing well, as far as I've heard. And what exactly is interesting?
Amryn's head tilted to the side as she studied me. I tried not to shrink from it. Only once before was a human made into an immortal. Interesting that it should happen again right as all the ancient players have returned. But Miriam was gifted long life, not a new body. And you, girl? She sniffed again, and I'd never felt so laid bare. Surprise lit Amryn's eyes. Rhys just nodded, whatever that meant.
I was tired already, tired of being assessed and evaluated.
Your very blood, your veins, your bones were made. A mortal soul in an immortal body.
I'm hungry,
Moore said, nudging me with a thigh. She snapped a finger, and plates piled high with roast chicken, greens, and bread appeared. Simple, but elegant. Not formal at all. Perhaps the sweater and pants wouldn't have been out of place for such a meal.
Amryn and Rhys can talk all night and bore us to tears, so don't bother waiting for them to dig in.
She picked up her fork, clicking her tongue.
I asked Rhys if I could take you to dinner, just the two of us, and he said you wouldn't want to.
But honestly, would you rather spend time with these two ancient boars or me?
For someone who is the same age as me, Rhys drawled, you seem to forget
everyone wants to talk,
Moore said, giving a warning glare at Cassian, who had indeed opened his mouth.
Can't we eat, and then talk?
An interesting balance between Rhys's terrifying second and his disarmingly chipper third. If Moore's rank was higher than that of the two warriors at this table, then there had to be some other reason beyond that irreverent charm. Some power to allow her to get into the fight with Amryn that Rhys had mentioned and walk away from it.
Azriel chuckled softly at Moore, but picked up his fork. I followed suit, waiting until he'd taken a bite before doing so. Just in case. Good. So good. And the wine?
I hadn't even realized Moore had poured me a glass until I finished my first sip, and she clinked her own against mine.
Don't let these old busybodies boss you around.
Cassian said, pot, kettle, black. Then he frowned at Amryn, who had hardly touched her plate. I always forget how bizarre that is.
He unceremoniously took her plate, dumping half the contents on his own before passing the rest to Azriel. Azrael said to Amran as he slid the food onto his plate.
I keep telling him to ask before he does that.
Amran flicked her fingers, and the empty plate vanished from Azrael's scarred hands.
If you hadn't been able to train him after all these centuries, boy, I don't think you'll make any progress now.
She straightened the silverware on the vacant place setting before her.
You don't eat?
I said to her, the first words I'd spoken since sitting.
Amran's teeth were unnervingly white.
Not this sort of food.
Cauldron boil me,
Moore said, gulping from her wine.
Can we not?
I decided I didn't want to know what Amran ate, either. Rhys chuckled from my other side.
Remind me to have family dinners more often.
Family dinners, not official court gatherings. And tonight, either they didn't know that I was here to decide if I truly wished to work with Rhys, or they didn't feel like pretending to be anything but what they were. They'd no doubt worn whatever they felt like. I had the rising feeling that I could have shown up in my nightgown and they wouldn't have cared. A unique group indeed. And against Highburn? Who would they be? What could they do as allies or opponents? Across from me, a cocoon of silence seemed to pulse around Azrael, even as the others dug into their food. I again peered at that oval of blue stone on his gauntlet as he sipped from his glass of wine. Azrael noted the look, swift as it had been, as I had a feeling he'd been noticing and cataloging all of my movements, words, and breaths. He held up his hands, the backs to me, so both jewels were on full display.
They're called siphons. They concentrate and focus our power in battle.
Only he and Cassian wore them. Rhys set down his fork and clarified for me.
The power of stronger Illyrians tends toward incinerate now, ask questions later. They have little magical gifts beyond that. The killing power.
The gift of a violent, warmongering people, Amran added. Azrael nodded, shadows wreathing his neck, his wrists. Cassian gave him a sharp look, face tightening, but Azrael ignored him. Rhys went on, though I knew he was aware of every glance between the spymaster and army commander.
The Illyrians bred the power to give them advantage in battle, yes. The siphons filter that raw power and allow Cassian and Azrael to transform into something more subtle and varied. Into shields and weapons, arrows and spears. Imagine the difference between hurling a bucket of paint against the wall and using a brush. The siphons allow for the magic to be nimble, precise on the battlefield, when its natural state lends itself toward something far messier and unrefined, and potentially dangerous when you're fighting in tight quarters.
I wondered how much of that any of them had needed to do, if those scars on Azrael's hands had come from it. Cassian flexed his fingers, admiring the clear red stones adorning the backs of his own broad hands.
Doesn't hurt that they also look damn good.
Amran muttered. Illyrians. Cassian bared his teeth in feral amusement and took a drink of his wine. Get to know them, try to envision how I might work with them, rely on them, if this conflict with Highburn exploded. I scrambled for something to ask and said to Azrael, those shadows gone again, How do you and Lord Cassian... Cassian spewed his wine across the table, causing Moore to leap up, swearing at him as she used a napkin to mop her dress. But Cassian was howling, and Azrael had a faint, wary smile on his face as Moore waved a hand at her dress and the spots of wine appeared on Cassian's fighting, or perhaps flying, I realized, leathers. My cheeks heated. Some court protocol that I'd unknowingly broken, and... Cassian, Rhys drawled, is not a lord. Though I'm sure he appreciates you thinking he is.
He surveyed his inner circle.
While we're on the subject, neither is Azrael, nor Amren. Mor, believe it or not, is the only pure-blooded titled person in this room.
Not him? Rhys must have seen the question on my face, because he said,
I'm half Illyrian. As good as a bastard where the thoroughbred high fae are concerned.
So you three aren't high fae? I said to him and the two males.
Cassian finished his laughing.
Illyrians are certainly not high fae, and glad of it.
He hooked his black hair behind an ear, rounded as mine had once been.
And we're not lesser fairies, though some try to call us that. We're just Illyrians. Considered expendable aerial cavalry for the night guard at the best of times, mindless soldier grunts at the worst.
Which is most of the time,
Azrael clarified.
I didn't dare ask if those shadows were a part of being Illyrian, too.
I didn't see you under the mountain, I said instead. I had to know, without a doubt, if they were there, if they'd seen me, if it'd impact how I interacted while working with... Silence fell. None of them, even Amren, looked at Rhysand. It was Mor who said,
Because none of us were.
Rhys's face was a mask of cold.
Amarantha didn't know they existed. And when someone tried to tell her, they usually found themselves without the mind to do so.
A shudder went down my spine. Not at the cold killer, but... You truly kept this city and all these people hidden from her for 50 years?
Cassian was staring hard at his plate, as if he might burst out of his skin.
Amren said, We will continue to keep this city and these people hidden from our enemies for a great many more. Not an answer. Rhys hadn't expected to see them again when he'd been dragged under the mountain. Yet he had kept them safe, somehow.
And it killed them, the four people at this table. It killed them all that he'd done it, however he'd done it, even Amren.
Perhaps not only for the fact that Rhys had endured Amarantha while they had been here, perhaps it was also for those left outside of the city, too. Perhaps picking one city, one place to shield, was better than nothing. Perhaps it was a comforting thing to have a spot in Prithian that remained untouched, unsullied. Moore's voice was a bit raw as she explained to me, her golden combs glinting in the light.
There is not one person in this city who is unaware of what went on outside these borders, or of the cost.
I didn't want to ask what price had been demanded. The pain that laced the heavy silence told me enough. Yet, if they might all live through their pain, might still laugh. I cleared my throat, straightening, and said to Azrael, who, shadows or no, seemed the safest, and therefore was probably the least so,
How did you meet?
A harmless question to feel them out, learn who they were, wasn't it? Azrael merely turned to Cassian, who was staring at Rhys with guilt and love on his face, so deep and agonized that some now splintered instinct had me almost reaching across the table to grip his hand. But Cassian seemed to process what I'd asked, and his friend's silent request that he tell the story instead, and a grin ghosted across his face.
We all hated each other at first.
Beside me, the light had winked out of Rhys's eyes. When I'd asked about Amarantha, what horrors I'd made him remember. A confession for a confession, I thought he'd done it for my sake. Maybe he had things he needed to voice, couldn't voice to these people, not without causing them more pain and guilt. Cassian went on, drawing my attention from the silent High Lord at my right.
We are bastards, you know, Az and I. The Illyrians, we love our people and our traditions, but they dwell in clans and camps deep in the mountains of the north and do not like outsiders, especially High Fae who try to tell them what to do. But they're just as obsessed with lineage and have their own princes and lords among them. Az, he said, pointing a thumb in his direction, his red siphon catching the light, was the bastard of one of the local lords. And if you think the bastard son of a lord is hated, then you can imagine how hated the bastard is of a war camp laundress and a warrior she couldn't or wouldn't remember.
His casual shrug didn't match the vicious glint in his hazel eyes.
Az's father sent him to our camp for training once he and his charming wife realized he was a shadow singer.
Shadow singer? Yes, the title, whatever it meant, seemed to fit.
Like the Daemadi, Rhys said to me, shadow singers are rare, coveted by courts and territories across the world for their stealth and predisposition to hear and feel things others can't.
Perhaps those shadows were indeed whispering to him, then. Azrael's cold face yielded nothing. Cassian said,
the camp lord practically shit himself with excitement the day Az was dumped in our camp. But me? Once my mother weaned me and I was able to walk, they flew me to a distant camp and chucked me into the mud to see if I would live or die.
They would have been smarter throwing you off a cliff, Moore said, snorting.
Oh, definitely,
Cassian said, that grin going razor sharp.
Especially because when I was old and strong enough to go back to the camp I'd been born in, I learned those pricks worked my mother until she died.
Again that silence fell, different this time. The tension and simmering anger of a unit who had endured so much, survived so much, and felt each other's pain keenly.
The Illyrians, Rhys smoothly cut in, that light finally returning to his gaze, are unparalleled warriors, and are rich with stories and traditions, but they are also brutal and backward, particularly in regard to how they treat their females.
Azrael's eyes had gone near vacant as he stared at the wall of windows behind me. They're barbarians, Amryn said, and neither Illyrian male objected. Moore nodded emphatically, even as she noted Azrael's posture and bit her lip. They cripple their females so they can keep them for breeding more flawless warriors. Rhys cringed. My mother was lowborn, he told me, and worked as a seamstress in one of their many mountain war camps. When females come of age in the camps, when they have their first bleeding, their wings are clipped. Just an incision in the right place, left to properly heal, can cripple you forever. And my mother, she was gentle and wild and loved to fly. So she did everything in her power to keep herself from maturing. She starved herself, gathered illegal herbs, anything to halt the natural course of her body. She turned 18 and hadn't yet bled, to the mortification of her parents. But her bleeding finally arrived, and all it took was for her to be in the wrong place at the wrong time before a male scented it on her and told the camp's lord. She tried to flee, took right to the skies. But she was young, and the warriors were faster and they dragged her back. They were about to tie her to the posts in the center of the camp when my father winnowed in for a meeting with the camp's lord about readying for the war. He saw my mother thrashing and fidgeting like a wildcat, and... he swallowed. The mating bond between them clicked into place. One look at her, and he knew what she was. He misted the guards holding her. My brows narrowed. Misted? Cassian let out a wicked chuckle as Reese floated a lemon wedge that had been garnishing his chicken into the air above the table. With a flick of his finger, it turned into citrus-scented mist. Through the blood rain, Reese went on as I shut out the image of what it'd do to a body, what he could do. My mother looked at him, and the bond fell into place for her. My father took her back to the night court that evening and made her his bride. She loved her people and missed them, but never forgot what they had tried to do to her, what they did to the females among them. She tried for decades to get my father to ban it, but the war was coming, and he wouldn't risk isolating the Illyrians when he needed them to lead his armies, and to die for him.
A real prize, your father, Moore grumbled.
At least he liked you, Rhys countered,
then clarified for me.
My father and mother, despite being mates, were wrong for each other. My father was cold and calculating and could be vicious, as he had been trained to be since birth. My mother was soft and fiery and beloved by everyone she met. She hated him after a time, but never stopped being grateful that he had saved her wings, that he allowed her to fly whenever and wherever she wished. And when I was born and could summon the Illyrian wings as I pleased, she wanted me to know her people's culture.
She wanted you to keep out of your father's claws, Moore said, swirling her wine, her shoulders loosening as Asriel at last blinked and seemed to shake off whatever memory had frozen him.
That too, Rhys added dryly. When I turned 8, my mother brought me to one of the Illyrian war camps to be trained, as all Illyrian males were trained. And like all Illyrian mothers, she shoved me toward the sparring ring on the first day and walked away without looking back.
She abandoned you? I found myself saying.
No, never, Rhys said, with a ferocity I'd heard only a few times, one of them being this afternoon. She was staying in the camp as well. But it is considered an embarrassment for a mother to coddle her son when he goes to train.
My brows lifted, and Cassian laughed.
Backward, like he said, the warrior told me. I was scared out of my mind, Rhys admitted, not a shade of shame to be found. I'd been learning to wield my powers, but Illyrian magic was a mere fraction of it, and it's rare amongst them, usually possessed only by the most powerful purebred warriors.
Again, I looked at the slumbering siphons atop the warrior's hands.
I tried to use a siphon during those years, Rhys said, and shattered about a dozen before I realized it wasn't compatible. The stones couldn't hold it. My power flows and is honed in other ways.
So difficult, being such a powerful High Lord, Moore teased.
Rhys rolled his eyes.
The Camp Lord banned me from using my magic, for all our sakes. But I had no idea how to fight when I set foot into that training ring that day. The other boys in my age group knew it, too. Especially one in particular, who took a look at me and beat me into a bloody mess.
You are so clean, Cassian said, shaking his head. The pretty half-breed son of the High Lord, how fancy you were in your new training clothes.
Cassian, Asriel told me, with that voice like darkness-given sound, resorted to getting new clothes over the years by challenging other boys to fights, with the prize being the clothes off their backs.
There was no pride in the words, not for his people's brutality. I didn't blame the Shadow Singer, though, to treat anyone that way. Cassian, however, chuckled. But I was now taking in the broad, strong shoulders, the light in his eyes. I'd never met anyone else in Prithian who had ever been hungry, desperate. Not like I'd been. Cassian blinked, and the way he looked at me shifted. More assessing, more sincere. I could have sworn I saw the words in his eyes.
You know what it is like. You know the market leaves. I'd beaten every boy in our age group twice over already,
Cassian went on.
But then Reese arrived in his clean clothes, and he smelled different. Like a true opponent. So I attacked. We both got 3 lashings apiece for the fight.
I flinched. Hitting children? They do worse, girl, Amryn cut in those camps. 3 lashings is practically an encouragement to fight again. When they do something truly bad, bones are broken repeatedly, over weeks.
I said to Reese, your mother willingly sent you into that?
Soft fire indeed.
My mother didn't want me to rely on my power, Rhysand said. She knew from the moment she conceived me that I'd be hunted my entire life. Where one strength failed, she wanted the others to save me. My education was another weapon, which was why she went with me, to tutor me after lessons were done for the day. And when she took me home that first night to our new house at the edge of the camp, she made me read by the window. It was there that I saw Cassian trudging through the mud, toward the few ramshackle tents outside of the camp. I asked her where he was going, and she told me that bastards are given nothing. They find their own shelter, own food. If they survive and get picked to be in a war band, they'll be bottom-ranking forever, but receive their own tents and supplies. But until then, he'd stay in the cold.
Those mountains,
Asriel added, his face hard as ice,
offer some of the harshest conditions you can imagine.
I'd spent enough time in frozen woods to get it. After my lessons, Reese went on, my mother cleaned my lashings, and as she did, I realized for the first time what it was to be warm and safe and cared for. And it didn't sit well.
Apparently not, Cassian said, because in the dead of night, that little prick woke me up in my piss-poor tent and told me to keep my mouth shut and come with him. And maybe the cold made me stupid, but I did. His mother was livid. But I'll never forget the look on her beautiful face when she saw me and said, there is a bathtub with hot running water. Get in it, or you can go back into the cold. Being a smart lad, I obeyed. When I got out, she had clean night clothes and ordered me into bed. I'd spent my life sleeping on the ground, and when I balked, she said she understood because she had felt the same once, and that it would feel as if I was being swallowed up, but the bed was mine for as long as I wanted it.
And you were friends after that?
No. Cauldron, no, Rhysand said. We hated each other, and only behaved because if one of us got into trouble or provoked the other, then neither of us ate that night. My mother started tutoring Cassian, but it wasn't until Asriel arrived a year later that we decided to be allies.
Cassian's grin grew as he reached around Amryn to clap his friend on the shoulder. Asriel sighed, the sound of the long suffering, the warmest expression I'd seen him make.
A new bastard in the camp, and an untrained shadow singer to boot. Not to mention he couldn't even fly, thanks to—
Moore cut in lazily. Stay on track, Cassian. Indeed, any warmth had vanished from Asriel's face, but I quieted my own curiosity as Cassian again shrugged, not even bothering to take note of the silence that seemed to leak from the shadow singer. Moore saw, though, even if Asriel didn't bother to acknowledge her concerned stare, the hand that she kept looking at as if she'd touch but thought better of it. Cassian went on.
Reese and I made his life a living hell, shadow singer or no. But Reese's mother had known Az's mother and took him in.
As we grew older, and the other males around us did too, we realized everyone else hated us enough that we had better odds of survival sticking together.
Do you have any gifts? I asked him. Like them?
I jerked my chin to Azriel and Rhys.
A volatile temper doesn't count,
Moore said as Cassian opened his mouth.
He gave her that grin I realized likely meant trouble was coming, but said to me, No, I don't. Not beyond a heaping pile of the killing power. Bastard born nobody through and through.
Rhys sat forward like he'd object, but Cassian forged ahead.
Even so, the other males knew that we were different. And not because we were two bastards and a half-breed, we were stronger, faster. Like the cauldron knew we'd been set apart and wanted us to find each other. Rhys's mother saw it too. Especially as we reached the age of maturity, and all we wanted to do was fuck and fight.
Males are horrible creatures, aren't they?
Amryn said.
Repulsive,
Moore said, clicking her tongue. Some surviving small part of my heart wanted to laugh at that. Cassian shrugged.
Rhys's power grew every day. And everyone, even the camp lords, knew he could mist everyone if he felt like it. And the two of us, we weren't far behind.
He tapped his crimson siphon with a finger.
A bastard Illyrian had never received one of these, ever. For Az and me to both be appointed them, albeit begrudgingly, had every warrior in every camp across those mountains sizing us up. Only pure-blooded pricks get siphons. Born and bred for the killing power, it still keeps them up at night, puzzling over where the hell we got it from.
Then the war came.
Azriel took over. Just the way he said the words made me sit up, listen.
And Rhys's father visited our camp to see how his son had fared after 20 years.
My father, Rhys said, swirling his wine once, twice,
saw that his son had not only started to rival him for power, but had allied himself with perhaps the two deadliest Illyrians in history. He got it into his head that if we were given a legion in the war, we might very well turn it against him when we returned.
Cassian snickered. So the prick separated us. He gave Rhys command of a legion of Illyrians who hated him for being a half-breed, and threw me into a different legion to be a common foot soldier,
even when my power outranked any of the war leaders.
As he kept for himself as his personal shadow singer, mostly for spying and his dirty work. We only saw each other on battlefields for the 7 years the war raged. They'd send around casualty list amongst the Illyrians, and I'd read each one, wondering if I'd see their names on it. But then Rhys was captured.
That is a story for another time, Rhys said, sharply enough that Cassian lifted his brows, but nodded. Rhys's violet eyes met mine, and I wondered if it was true starlight that flickered so intensely in them as he spoke.
Once I became High Lord, I appointed these four to my inner circle and told the rest of my father's old court that if they had a problem with my friends, they could leave. They all did. Turns out, having a half-breed High Lord was made worse by his appointment of 2 females and 2 Illyrian bastards.
As bad as humans, in some ways.
What happened to them, then?
Rhys shrugged, those great wings shifting with the movement.
The nobility of the Night Court fall into one of 3 categories.
Those who hated me enough that when Amarantha took over, they joined her court and later found themselves dead. Those who hated me enough to try to overthrow me and face the consequences. And those who hated me, but not enough to be stupid, and have since tolerated a half-breed's rule, especially when it so rarely interferes with their miserable lives.
Are they the ones who live beneath the mountain?
A nod. In the Hewn City, yes. I gave it to them for not being fools.
They're happy to stay there, rarely leaving, ruling themselves and being as wicked as they please for all eternity.
That was the court he must have shown Amarantha when she first arrived, and its wickedness must have pleased her enough that she modeled her own after it.
A court of nightmares, Moore said, sucking on a tooth.
And what is this court? I asked, gesturing to them.
The most important question.
It was Cassian, eyes clear and bright as his siphon, who said,
The Court of Dreams.
The Court of Dreams. The dreams of a half-breed High Lord, two bastard warriors, and the two females.
And you? I said to Moore and Amran.
Amran merely said, Rhys offered to make me his second. No one had ever asked me before, so I said yes, to see what it might be like. I found I enjoyed it.
Moore leaned back in her seat, Azriel now watching every movement she made with subtle, relentless focus.
I was a dreamer born into the Court of Nightmares, Moore said. She twirled a curl around a finger, and I wondered if her story might be the worst of all of them, as she said simply, So I got out.
What's your story, then? Cassian said to me with a jerk of his chin.
I'd assumed Rhysand had told them everything. Rhys merely shrugged at me. So I straightened. I was born into a wealthy merchant family, with two older sisters and parents who only cared about their money and social standing. My mother died when I was 8. My father lost his fortune 3 years later. He sold everything to pay off his debts, moved us into a hovel, and didn't bother to find work while he let us slowly starve for years. I was 14 when the last of the money ran out, along with the food. He wouldn't work, couldn't, because the debtors came and shattered his leg in front of us. So I went into the forest and taught myself to hunt. And I kept us all alive, if not near starvation at times, for 5 years, until everything happened. They fell quiet again, Azriel's gaze now considering. He hadn't told his story. Did it ever come up? Or did they never discuss those burns on his hands? And what did the shadows whisper to him? Did they speak in a language at all? But Cassian said,
You taught yourself to hunt. What about to fight?
I shook my head. Cassian braced his arms on the table.
Lucky for you, you've just found yourself a teacher.
I opened my mouth, protesting, but Rhysand's mother had given him an arsenal of weapons to use if the other failed.
What did I have in my own beyond a good shot with a bow and brute stubbornness?
And if I had this new power, these other powers, I would not be weak again. I would not be dependent on anyone else. I would never have to endure the touch of the adder as it dragged me because I was too helpless to know where and how to hit. Never again. But what Ianthe and Tamlin had said.
You don't think it sends a bad message if people see me learning to fight, using weapons?
The moment the words were out, I realized the stupidity of them. The stupidity of what had been shoved down my throat these past few months.
Silence. Then Moore said, with a soft venom that made me understand the High Lord's Third had received training of her own in that Court of Nightmares, Let me tell you two things.
As someone who has perhaps been in your shoes before. Again, that shared bond of anger, of pain throbbed between them all, save for Amran, who was giving me a look dripping with distaste.
One, Moore said, You have left the Spring Court. I tried not to let the full weight of those words sink in.
If that does not send a message, for good or bad, then your training will not either.
Two,
she continued, laying her palm flat on the table.
I once lived in a place where the opinion of others mattered. It suffocated me, nearly broke me. So you'll understand me, Feyre, when I say that I know what you feel, and I know what they tried to do to you, and that with enough courage, you can say, to hell with a reputation.
Her voice gentled, and the tension between them all faded with it.
You do what you love, what you need.
Moore would not tell me what to wear or not wear. She would not allow me to step aside while she spoke for me.
She would not do any of the things that I had so willingly, desperately allowed Ianthe to do. I had never had a female friend before. Ianthe, she had not been one. Not in the way that mattered, I realized. And Nesta and Elaine, in those few weeks I'd been at home before Amarantha, had started to fill that role, but looking at Moore, I couldn't explain it, couldn't understand it, but I felt it. Like I could indeed go to dinner with her, talk to her. Not that I had much of anything to offer her in return. But what she'd said, what they'd all said, yes, Rhys had been wise to bring me here, to let me decide if I could handle them, the teasing and intensity and power, if I wanted to be a part of a group who would likely push me and overwhelm me and maybe frighten me, but if they were willing to stand against Highburn after already fighting them 500 years ago. I met Cassian's gaze, and though his eyes danced, there was nothing amused in them. I'll think about it. Through the bond in my head, I could have sworn I felt a glimmer of pleased surprise. I checked my mental shields, but they were intact, and Rhysand's calm face revealed no hint of its origin. So I said clearly, steadily to him, I accept your offer to work with you, to earn my keep, and to help with Highburn in whatever way I can.
Good, Rhys merely replied.
Even as the others raised their brows. Yes, they'd obviously not been told this was an interview of sorts.
Because we start tomorrow.
Where and what? I sputtered.
Rhys interlaced his fingers and rested them on the table, and I realized there was another point to this dinner beyond my decision, as he announced to us all.
Because the King of Highburn is indeed about to launch a war, and he wants to resurrect Jurien to do it.
Jurien, the ancient warrior whose soul Amarantha had imprisoned within that hideous ring as punishment for killing her sister. The ring that contained his eye.
Bullshit! Cassian spat. There's no way to do that.
Amryn had gone still, and it was she whom Azriel was observing, marking.
Amarantha was just the beginning, Rhys had once told me. Had he known this, even then?
Had those months under the mountain merely been a prelude to whatever hell was about to be unleashed, resurrecting the dead? What sort of unholy power?
Moore groaned.
Why would the king want to resurrect Jurien? He was so odious. All he liked to do was talk about himself.
The age of these people hit me like a brick, despite all they'd told me minutes earlier. The war, they had all fought in the war 500 years ago.
That's what I want to find out, Rhysand said, and how the king plans to do it.
Amryn at last said, word will have reached him about Feyre's making. He knows it's possible for the dead to be remade. I shifted in my seat,
I'd expected brute armies, pure bloodshed. But this?
All 7 High Lords would have to agree to that,
Moore countered.
There's not a chance it happens. He'll take another route.
Her eyes narrowed to slits as she faced Rhys.
All the slaughtering, the massacres at temples, you think it's tied to this?
I know it's tied to this. I didn't want to tell you until I knew for certain. But Azriel confirmed that they'd raided the memorial in Sangreva 3 days ago. They're looking for something. Or found it.
Azriel nodded in confirmation, even as Moore cast a surprised look in his direction. Azriel gave her an apologetic shrug back. I breathed. That's why the ring and the finger bone vanished after Amarantha died. For this.
But who?
My mouth went dry. They never caught the adder, did they? Rhys said too quietly, No, they didn't. The food in my stomach turned leaden. He said to Amren, How does one take an eye and a finger bone and make it into a man again? And how do we stop it? Amren frowned at her untouched wine.
You already know how to find the answer. Go to the prison. Talk to the bone carver.
Shit, Moore and Cassian both said.
Rhys said calmly,
Perhaps you would be more effective, Amren.
I was grateful for the table separating us as Amren hissed,
I will not set foot in the prison, Rhys Sand, and you know it. So go yourself. Or send one of these dogs to do it for you.
Cassian grinned, showing his white, straight teeth, perfect for biting. Amren snapped hers once in return. Azriel just shook his head.
I'll go. The prison sentries know me, what I am.
I wondered if the Shadow Singer was usually the first to throw himself into danger. Moore's fingers stilled on the stem of her wine glass, her eyes narrowing on Amren. The jewels, the red gown, all perhaps a way to downplay whatever dark power roiled in her veins.
If anyone's going to the prison, Rhys said before Moore opened her mouth, it's me and Feyre.
What?
Moore demanded, palms now flat on the table.
He won't talk to Rhys, Amren said to the others, or to Azriel, or to any of us. We've got nothing to offer him, but an immortal with a mortal soul.
She stared at my chest as if she could see the heart pounding beneath, and I contemplated yet again what she ate.
The bone carver might be willing indeed to talk to her.
They stared at me, as if waiting for me to beg not to go, to curl up and cower. Their quick, brutal interview to see if they wanted to work with me, I supposed.
But the bone carver, the Naga, the Atter, the Suriel, the Boggy, the Midengard worm,
maybe they'd broken whatever part of me truly feared. Or maybe fear was only something I now felt in my dreams.
Your choice, Feyre, Rhys said casually.
To shirk and mourn or face some unknown horror? The choice was easy.
How bad can it be?
Was my response.
Bad, Cassian said.
None of them bothered to contradict him.
Chapter 17 Jurian. The name clanged through me, even after we finished dinner, even after Moore and Cassian and Azriel and Amren had stopped debating and snarling about who would do what and be where while Rhys and I went to the prison, whatever that was, tomorrow. Rhys flew me back over the city, plunging into the lights and darkness.
I quickly found I much preferred ascending, and couldn't bring myself to watch for too long without feeling my dinner rise up. Not fear, just some reaction of my body. We flew in silence, the whistling winter wind the only sound, despite his cocoon of warmth blocking it from freezing me entirely. Only when the music of the streets welcomed us did I peer into his face, his features unreadable as he focused on flying. "Tonight, I felt you again, through the bond. Did I get past your shields?"
"No," he said, scanning the cobblestone streets below. "This bond is a living thing, an open channel between us, shaped by my powers, shaped by what you needed when we made the bargain."
I needed not to be dead when I agreed.
"You needed not to be alone."
Our eyes met. It was too dark to read whatever was in his gaze. I was the one who looked away first.
"I'm still learning how and why we can sometimes feel things the other doesn't want known," he admitted. "So I don't have an explanation for what you felt tonight."
"You needed not to be alone. But what about him? 50 years he'd been separated from his friends, his family." I said, "You let Amarantha and the entire world think you rule and delight in a court of nightmares. It's all a front, to keep what matters most safe." The city lights gilded his face.
"I love my people and my family. Do not think I wouldn't become a monster to keep them protected."
"You already did that under the mountain."
The words were out before I could stop them.
The wind rustled his hair.
"And I suspect I'll have to do it again soon enough."
"What was the cost," I dared ask, "of keeping this place secret and free?" He shot straight down, wings beating to keep us smooth as we landed on the roof of the townhouse. I made to step away, but he gripped my chin.
"You know the cost already."
"Amarantha's whore." He nodded, and I think I might have said the two vile words aloud.
"When she tricked me out of my powers and left the scraps, it was still more than the others. And I decided to use it to tap into the mind of every Night Court citizen she captured and anyone who might know the truth. I made a web between all of them, actively controlling their minds every second of every day, every decade, to forget about Valaris. To forget about Mor and Amren and Cassian and Azriel. Amarantha wanted to know who was close to me, who to kill and torture. But my true court was here, ruling this city and the others. And I used the remainder of my power to shield them all from sight and sound. I had only enough for one city, one place. I chose the one that had been hidden from history already. I chose. And now must live with the consequences of knowing there were more left outside who suffered. But for those here, anyone flying or traveling near Valaris would see nothing but barren rock, and if they tried to walk through it, they'd find themselves suddenly deciding otherwise. Sea travel and merchant trading were halted. Sailors became farmers, working the earth around Valaris instead. And because my powers were focused on shielding them all, Feyre, I had very little to use against Amarantha. So I decided that to keep her from asking questions about the people who mattered, I would be her whore."
He'd done all of that. Had done such horrible things. Done everything for his people, his friends. And the only piece of himself that he'd hidden and managed to keep her from tainting, destroying, even if it meant 50 years trapped in a cage of rock. Those wings now flared wide. How many knew about those wings outside of Valaris or the Illyrian war camps? Or had he wiped all memory of them from Prithian long before Amarantha? Rhys released my chin. but as he lowered his hand, I gripped his wrist, feeling the solid strength. "It's a shame," I said, the words nearly gobbled up by the sound of the city music, "that others in Prithian don't know. A shame that you let them think the worst." He took a step back, his wings beating the air like mighty drums.
"As long as the people who matter most know the truth, I don't care about the rest. Get some sleep."
Then he shot into the sky and was swallowed by the darkness between the stars. I tumbled into a sleep so heavy my dreams were an undertow that dragged me down, 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 until I couldn't escape them. I lay naked and prone on a familiar red marble floor while Amarantha slid a knife along my bare ribs, the steel scraping softly against my skin.
"Lying, traitorous human," she purred, "with your filthy lying heart."
The knife scratched, a cool caress. I struggled to get up, but my body wouldn't work. She pressed a kiss to the hollow of my throat.
"You're as much a monster as me."
She curved the knife over my breast, angling it toward my peaked nipple, as if she could see the heart beating beneath. I started sobbing.
"Don't waste your tears."
Someone far away was roaring my name, begging for me.
"I'm going to make eternity a hell for you," she promised,
the tip of the dagger piercing the sensitive flesh beneath my breast, her lips hovering a breath above mine as she pushed.
Hands. There were hands on my shoulders, shaking me, squeezing me. I thrashed against them, screaming, screaming, "Feyre!"
The voice was at once the night and the dawn and the stars and the earth, and every inch of my body calmed at the primal dominance in it.
"Open your eyes," the voice ordered.
I did. My throat was raw, my mouth full of ash, my face soaked and sticky, and Rhysand was hovering above me, his eyes wide.
"It was a dream," he said, his breathing as hard as mine.
The moonlight trickling through the windows illuminated the dark lines of swirling tattoos down his arm, his shoulders, across his sculpted chest, like the ones I bore on my arm. He scanned my face.
"A dream," he said again.
"Valaris. I was in Valaris, at his house. And I had my dream."
The sheets, the blankets were ripped, shredded, but not with a knife. And that ashy, smoky taste coating my mouth? My hand was unnervingly steady as I lifted it to find my fingers ending in simmering embers. Living claws of flame that had sliced through my bed linens like they were cauterizing wounds. I shoved him off with a hard shoulder, falling out of bed and slamming into a small chest before I hurtled into the bathing room, fell to my knees before the toilet, and was sick to my stomach. Again. Again. My fingertips hissed against the cool porcelain. Large, warm hands pulled my hair back a moment later.
"Breathe," Rhys said. "Imagine them winking out like candles, one by one."
I heaved into the toilet again, shuddering as light and heat crested and rushed out of me, and savored the empty, cool dark that pooled in their wake.
"Well, that's one way to do it," he said.
When I dared to look at my hands, braced on the bowl, the embers had been extinguished. Even that power in my veins, along my bones, slumbered once more.
"I have this dream," Rhys said as I retched again, holding my hair. where it's not me stuck under her, but Cassian or Azrael. And she's pinned their wings to the bed with spikes, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. She's commanded me to watch, and I have no choice but to see how I failed them.
I clung to the toilet, spitting once, and reached up to flush. I watched the water swirl away entirely before I twisted my head to look at him. His fingers were gentle but firm where he'd fisted them in my hair.
You never failed them, I rasped.
I did horrible things to ensure that.
Those violet eyes narrowed in the dim light.
So did I.
My sweat clung like blood, the blood of those two fairies. I pivoted, barely turning in time. His other hand stroked long, soothing lines down the curve of my back, as over and over I yielded my dinner. When the latest wave had ebbed, I breathed, "The flames?"
Autumn Court.
I couldn't muster a response. At some point, I leaned against the coolness of the nearby bathtub and closed my eyes. When I awoke, sun streamed through the windows and I was in my bed, tucked in tightly to the fresh, clean sheets. I stared up at the sharp, grassy slope of the small mountain, shivering at the veils of mist that wafted past. Behind us, the land swept away to brutal cliffs and a violent pewter sea. Ahead, nothing but a wide, flat-topped mountain of gray stone and moss. Rhys stood at my side, a double-edged sword sheathed down his spine, knives strapped to his legs, clothed in what I could only assume were Illyrian fighting leathers, based on what Cassian and Azrael had worn the night before. The dark pants were tight, the scale-like plates of leather worn and scarred, and sculpted to legs I hadn't noticed were quite that muscled. His close-fitting jacket had been built around the wings that were now fully out, bits of dark, scratched armor added at the shoulders and forearms. If his attire hadn't told me enough about what we might be facing today, if my own similar attire hadn't told me enough, all I needed was to take one look at the rock before us and know it wouldn't be pleasant. I had been so distracted in the study an hour ago by what Rhys had been writing as he drafted a careful request to visit the summer court that I hadn't thought to ask what to expect here. Not that Rhys had really bothered explaining why he wanted to visit the summer court, beyond improving diplomatic relations. "Where are we?" I said, our first words since winnowing in a moment ago. Valaris had been brisk, sunny. This place, wherever it was freezing, deserted, barren. Only rock and grass and mist and sea. "On an island in the heart of the Western Isles," Rhysand said, staring up at the Mammoth Mountain. "And that," he said, pointing to it, "is the prison." There was nothing, no one around.
"I don't see anything."
"The rock is the prison, and inside it are the foulest, most dangerous creatures and criminals you can imagine."
Go inside, inside the stone under another mountain.
"This place," he said, "was made before High Lords existed, before Prithian was Prithian. Some of the inmates remember those days, remember a time when it was Moore's family, not mine, that ruled the North."
"Why won't Amryn go in here?"
"Because she was once a prisoner."
"Not in that body, I take it."
A cruel smile. "No, not at all."
I shivered.
"The hike will get your blood warming," Rhys said. "Since we can't winnow inside or fly to the entrance, the wards demand that visitors walk in, the long way."
I didn't move. the word lodged in my throat. Go under another mountain.
It helps, the panic, he said quietly, to remind myself that I got out, that we all got out.
Barely. I tried to breathe. I couldn't.
We got out, and it might happen again if we don't go inside.
The chill mist bit at my face, and I tried, I did, to take a step toward it.
My body refused to obey.
I tried to take a step again. I tried for Elaine and Nesta and the human world that might be wrecked, but I couldn't. Please?
I whispered. I didn't care if it meant that I'd failed my first day of work. Rhysand, as promised, didn't ask any questions as he gripped my hand and brought us back to the winter sun and rich colors of Valaris. I didn't get out of bed for the rest of the day.
Chapter 18. Amryn was standing at the foot of my bed. I jolted back, slamming into the headboard, blinded by the morning light blazing in, fumbling for a weapon, anything to use.
No wonder you're so thin if you vomit up your guts every night.
She sniffed, her lip curling. You reek of it. The bedroom door was shut. Rhys had said no one entered without his permission, but she chucked something onto the bed. A little gold amulet of pearl and cloudy blue stone.
This got me out of the prison. Wear it in, and they can never keep you.
I didn't touch the amulet.
Allow me to make one thing clear, Amryn said, bracing both hands on the carved wooden footboard. I do not give that amulet lightly, but you may borrow it while you do what needs to be done and return it to me when you are finished. If you keep it, I will find you, and the results won't be pleasant. But it is yours to use in the prison. By the time my fingers brushed the cool metal and stone, she'd walked out the door.
Rhys hadn't been wrong about the fire drake comparison.
Rhys kept frowning at the amulet as we hiked the slope of the prison, so steep that at times we had to crawl on our hands and knees. Higher and higher we climbed, and I drank from the countless little streams that gurgled through the bumps and hollows in the moss and grass slopes. All around, the mist drifted by, whipped by the wind, whose hollow moaning drowned out our crunching footsteps.
When I caught Rhys looking at the necklace for the 10th time, I said, "What?" "She gave you that." Not a question.
It must be serious, then, I said. The risk with...
Don't say anything you don't want others hearing.
He pointed to the stone beneath us. The inmates have nothing better to do than listen through the earth and rock for gossip. They'll sell any bit of information for food, sex, maybe a breath of air.
I could do this. I could master this fear. Amryn had gotten out and stayed out. And the amulet? It'd keep me free, too. I'm sorry, I said, about yesterday.
I'd stayed in bed for hours, unable to move or think.
Rhys held out a hand to help me climb a particularly steep rock, easily hauling me up to where he perched at its top. It had been so long, too long, since I'd been outdoors, using my body, relying on it. My breathing was ragged, even with my new immortality.
You've got nothing to be sorry for, he said. You're here now.
But enough of a coward that I would never have gone without that amulet. He added with a wink, I won't dock your pay. I was too winded to even scowl. We climbed until the upper face of the mountain became a wall before us,
nothing but grassy slopes sweeping behind, far below, to where they flowed to the restless gray sea. Rhys drew the sword from his back in a swift movement.
"Don't look so surprised," he said.
"I've never seen you with a weapon."
"Aside from the dagger he'd grabbed to slit Amarantha's throat at the end, to spare me from agony."
"Cassian would laugh himself hoarse hearing that, and then make me go into the sparring ring with him."
"Can he beat you?"
"Hand-to-hand combat? Yes. He'd have to earn it for a change, but he'd win."
No arrogance, no pride.
"Cassian is the best warrior I've encountered in any court, any land.
He leads my armies because of it."
I didn't doubt his claim. And the other Illyrian. "Azrael, his hands. The scars, I mean," I said. "Where did they come from?"
Rhys was quiet a moment. Then he said, too softly,
"His father had two legitimate sons, both older than Azrael. Both cruel and spoiled.
They learned it from their mother, the Lord's wife. For the 11 years that Azrael lived in his father's keep, she saw to it he was kept in a cell with no window, no light. They let him out for an hour every day. Let him see his mother for an hour once a week. He wasn't permitted to train, or fly, or any of the things his Illyrian instincts roared at him to do. When he was 8, his brothers decided it'd be fun to see what happened when you mixed an Illyrian's quick healing gifts with oil and fire. The warriors heard Azrael screaming, but not quick enough to save his hands." Nausea swamped me. But that still left him with 3 more years living with them. What other horrors had he endured before he was sent to that mountain camp?
Were his brothers punished?
Rhys's face was as unfeeling as the rock and wind and sea around us, as he said with lethal quiet, "Eventually." There was enough rawness in the words that I instead asked,
"And more. What does she do for you?"
"More is who I call in when the armies fail and Cassian and Azrael are both dead."
My blood chilled.
"So she's supposed to wait until then?" "No. As my third, More is my court overseer. She looks after the dynamics between the Court of Nightmares and the Court of Dreams, and runs both Valaris and the Hewn City. I suppose in the mortal realm, she might be considered a queen."
"And Amren?"
"Her duties as my second make her my political advisor, walking library and doer of my dirty work. I appointed her upon gaining my throne, but she was my ally, maybe my friend, long before that."
"I mean, in that war where your armies fail, and Cassian and Azrael are dead, and even More is gone?"
Each word was like ice on my tongue. Rhys paused his reach for the bald rock face before us.
"If that day comes, I'll find a way to break the spell on Amren and unleash her on the world. And ask her to end me first."
"By the mother. What is she?"
After our chat this morning, perhaps it was stupid to ask. "Something else. Something worse than us. And if she ever finds a way to shred her prison of flesh and bone, Cauldron save us all."
I shivered again and stared up at the sheer stone wall. "I can't climb bare rock like that."
"You don't need to," Rhys said, laying a hand flat on the stone. Like a mirage, it vanished in a ripple of light. Pale, carved gates stood in its place, so high their tops were lost to the mist. Gates of bone. The bone gates swung open silently,
revealing a cavern of black so inky I had never seen its like, even under the mountain. I gripped the amulet at my throat, the metal warm under my palm. Amryn got out. I could walk out, too. Rhys put a warm hand on my back and guided me inside, three balls of moonlight bobbing before us.
No, 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 no.
Breathe, he said in my ear. One breath.
Where are the guards?
I managed to get out past the tightness in my lungs.
They dwell within the rock of the mountain, he murmured, his hand finding mine and wrapping around it as he tugged me into the immortal gloom. They only emerge at feeding time, or to deal with restless prisoners. They're nothing but shadows of thought and an ancient spell.
With the small lights floating ahead, I tried not to look too long at the gray walls, especially when they were so rough-hewn that the jagged bits could have been a nose or a craggy brow or a set of sneering lips. The dry ground was clear of anything but pebbles, and there was silence. Utter silence as we rounded a bend, and the last of the light from the misty world faded into inky black. I focused on my breathing. I couldn't be trapped here. I couldn't be locked in this horrible, dead place. The path plunged deep into the belly of the mountain, and I clutched Rhys's fingers to keep from losing my footing. He still had his sword gripped in his other hand.
Do all the High Lords have access?
My words were so soft they were devoured by the dark. Even that thrumming power in my veins had vanished, burrowing somewhere in my bones. No, the prison is law unto itself. The island may even be an eighth court. But it falls under my jurisdiction, and my blood is keyed to the gates.
Could you free the inmates?
No. Once the sentence is given and a prisoner passes those gates, they belong to the prison. It will never let them out. I take sentencing people here very, very seriously.
Have you ever?
Yes. And now is not the time to speak of it. He squeezed my hand in emphasis. We wound down through the gloom. There were no doors, no lights, no sounds. Not even a trickle of water. But I could feel them. I could feel them sleeping, pacing, running hands and claws over the other side of the walls. They were ancient and cruel in a way I had never known, not even with Amarantha. They were infinite and patient and had learned the language of darkness, of stone.
How long? I breathed. How long was she in here?
I didn't dare say her name.
Azrael looked once into the archives in our oldest temples and libraries. All he found was a vague mention that she went in before Prithian was split into the courts and emerged once they had been established. Her imprisonment predates our written word. I don't know how long she was in here. A few millennia seemed like a fair guess.
Horror roiled in my gut. You never asked?
Why bother? She'll tell me when it's necessary.
Where did she come from?
The brooch he'd given her. Such a small gift for a monster who had once dwelled here.
I don't know.
Though there are legends that claim when the world was born there were rips in the fabric of the realms, that in the chaos of forming, creatures from other worlds could walk through one of those rips and enter another world. But the rips closed at will, and the creatures could become trapped with no way home.
It was more horrifying than I could fathom. Both that monsters had walked between worlds and the terror of being trapped in another realm.
You think she was one of them?
I think that she is the only one of her kind, and there is no record of others ever having existed. Even the Soriel have numbers, however small. But she, and some of those in the prison, I think they came from somewhere else. And they have been looking for a way home for a long, long time.
I was shivering beneath the fur-lined leather, my breath clouding in front of me.
Down and down we went, and time lost its grip.
It could have been hours or days, and we paused only when my useless, wasted body demanded water. Even while I drank, he didn't let go of my hand, as if the rock would swallow me up forever. I made sure those breaks were swift and rare. And still we went onward, deeper. Only the lights and his hand kept me from feeling as if I were about to free fall into darkness. For a heartbeat, the reek of my own dungeon cell cloyed in my nose, and the crunch of moldy hay tickled my cheek. Reese's hand tightened on my own. Just a bit farther.
We must be near the bottom by now.
Past it. The bone carver is caged beneath the roots of the mountain.
Who is he? What is he?
I'd only been briefed in what I was to say. Nothing of what to expect. No doubt to keep me from panicking too thoroughly. No one knows. He'll appear as he wants to appear.
Shapeshifter?
Yes and no. He'll appear to you as one thing, and I might be standing right beside you and see another.
I tried not to start bleeding like cattle. And the bone carving?
You'll see.
Reese stopped before a smooth slab of stone. The hall continued down, down into the ageless dark. The air here was tight, compact. Even my puffs of breath on the chill air seemed short-lived. Rhysand at last released my hand, only to lay his once more on the bare stone. It rippled beneath his palm, forming a door. Like the gates above, it was of ivory, bone. And in its surface were etched countless images, flora and fauna, seas and clouds, stars and moons, infants and skeletons, creatures fair and foul. It swung away. The cell was pitch black, hardly distinguishable from the hall.
"I have carved the doors for every prisoner in this place," said a small voice within. "But my own remains my favorite."
"I'd have to agree," Rhysand said.
He stepped inside, the light bobbing ahead to illuminate a dark-haired boy sitting against the far wall, eyes of crushing blue taking in Rhysand, then sliding to where I lurked in the doorway. Reese reached into a bag I hadn't realized he'd been carrying. No, one he'd summoned from whatever pocket between realms he used for storage. He chucked an object toward the boy, who looked no more than 8. White gleamed as it clacked on the rough stone floor. Another bone, long and sturdy, and jagged on one end.
"The calf bone that made the final kill when Thera slew the Midgard worm," Reese said. My very blood stilled. There had been many bones that I'd laid in my trap. I hadn't noticed which had ended the worm, or thought anyone would.
"Come inside,"
was all the bone carver said, and there was no innocence, no kindness in that child's voice. I took one step in, and no more.
"It has been an age,"
the boy said, gobbling down the sight of me,
"since something new came into this world."
"Hello," I breathed.
The boy's smile was a mockery of innocence.
Are you frightened?
Yes, I said.
Never lie. That had been Reese's first command.
The boy stood, but kept to the other side of the cell.
Feyre,
he murmured, cocking his head. The orb of Feylight glazed the inky hair in silver.
Feyre,
he said again, drawing out the syllables as if he could taste them. At last he straightened his head.
Where did you go when you died?
A question for a question, I replied, as I'd been instructed over breakfast. The bone carver inclined his head to Rhysand.
You were always smarter than your forefathers.
But those eyes alighted on me.
Tell me where you went, what you saw, and I will answer your question.
Rhys gave me a subtle nod, but his eyes were wary, because what the boy had asked. I had to calm my breathing to think, to remember. But there was blood and death and pain and screaming, and she was breaking me, killing me so slowly, and Rhys was there, roaring in fury as I died, Tamlin begging for my life on his knees before her throne. But there was so much agony, and I wanted it to be over, wanted it all to stop. Rhys had gone rigid while he monitored the bone carver, as if those memories were freely flowing past the mental shields I'd made sure were intact this morning. And I wondered if he thought I'd give them up then and there. I bunched my hands into fists. I had lived. I had gotten out. I would get out today. I heard the crack, I said. Rhys's head whipped toward me. I heard the crack when she broke my neck. It was in my ears, but also in my skull. I was gone before I felt anything more than the first lash of pain. The bone carver's violet eyes seemed to glow brighter. And then it was dark. A different sort of dark than this place, but there was a thread, I said. A tether. And I yanked on it, and suddenly I could see. Not through my eyes, but his, I said, inclining my head toward Rhys. I uncurled the fingers of my tattooed hand. And I knew I was dead, and this tiny scrap of spirit was all that was left of me, clinging to the thread of our bargain.
But was there anyone there? Were you seeing anything beyond?
There was only that bond in the darkness. Rhysand's face had gone pale, his mouth a tight line. And when I was made anew, I said, I followed that bond back, to me. I knew that home was on the other end of it. There was light then, like swimming up through sparkling wine.
Were you afraid?
All I wanted was to return to the people around me. I wanted it badly enough that I didn't have room for fear. The worst had happened, and the darkness was calm and quiet. It did not seem like a bad thing to fade into, but I wanted to go home. So I followed the bond home.
There was no other world,
the bone carver pushed. If there was or is, I did not see it.
No light? No portal?
Where is it that you want to go? The question almost leaped off my tongue. It was only peace and darkness.
Did you have a body?
No.
Did...
That's enough from you, Rhysand purred, the sound like velvet over sharpest steel. You said a question for a question, now you've asked...
He did a tally on his fingers.
6.
The bone carver leaned back against the wall and slid to a sitting position. It is a rare day when I meet someone who comes back from true death. Forgive me for wanting to peer behind the curtain. He waved a delicate hand in my direction. Ask it, girl. If there was no body, nothing but perhaps a bit of bone, I said as solidly as I could, would there be a way to resurrect that person? To grow them a new body? Put their soul into it?
Those eyes flashed.
Was the soul somehow preserved? Contained? I tried not to think about the eye ring Amarantha had worn, the soul she'd trapped inside to witness her every horror and depravity. Yes. There is no way.
I almost sighed in relief.
Unless... The boy bounced each finger off his thumb, his hand like some pale, twitchy insect. Long ago, before the High Fae, before man, there was a cauldron. They say all the magic was contained inside it, that the world was born in it. But it fell into the wrong hands, and great and horrible things were done with it. Things were forged with it. Such wicked things that the cauldron was eventually stolen back at great cost. It could not be destroyed, for it had made all things, and if it were broken, then life would cease to be. So it was hidden and forgotten. Only with that cauldron could something that is dead be reforged like that.
Rhysand's face was again a mask of calm. Where did they hide it?
Tell me a secret no one knows, Lord of Night, and I'll tell you mine. I braced myself for whatever horrible truth was about to come my way. But Rhysand said, My right knee gets a twinge of pain when it rains. I wrecked it during the war, and it's hurt ever since. The bone carver bit out a harsh laugh, even as I gaped at Rhys. You always were my favorite, he said, giving a smile I would never for a moment think was childlike.
Very well. The cauldron was hidden at the bottom of a frozen lake in Lapland.
Rhys began to turn for me as if he'd head there right now, but the bone carver added, and vanished. A long, long time ago.
Rhys halted.
I don't know where it went to, or where it is now. Millennia before you were born, the 3 feet on which it stands were successfully cleaved from its base in an attempt to fracture some of its power. It worked. Barely. Removing the feet was like cutting off the first knuckle of a finger. Irksome. But you could still use the rest with some difficulty. The feet were hidden at 3 different temples. Cesare, Sangreva, and Ithaca. If they have gone missing, it is likely the cauldron is active once more, and that the wielder wants it at full power, and not a wisp of it is missing.
That was why the temples had been ransacked. To get the feet on which the cauldron stood and restore it to its full power. Rhys merely said, I don't suppose you know who now has the cauldron. The bone carver pointed a small finger at me.
Promise me that you'll give me her bones when she dies, and I'll think about it.
I stiffened, but the boy laughed.
No. I don't think even you would promise that, Rhysand.
I might have called the look on Rhys's face a warning.
Thank you for your help, he said, placing a hand on my back to guide me out.
But if he knew... I turned again to the boy creature.
There was a choice.
In death, I said. Those eyes guttered with cobalt fire. Reese's hand contracted on my back, but remained warm, steady. And I wondered if the touch was more to reassure him that I was there, still breathing.
I knew, I went on, that I could drift away into the dark, and I chose to fight, to hold on for a bit longer, yet I knew if I wanted, I could have faded. And maybe it would be a new world, a realm of rest and peace, but I wasn't ready for it, not to go there alone. I knew there was something else waiting beyond the dark, something good.
For a moment, those blue eyes flared brighter. Then the boy said,
"You know who has the cauldron, Resand? Who has been pillaging the temples? You only came here to confirm what you have long guessed."
"The King of Highburn."
Dread sluiced through my veins and pooled in my stomach. I shouldn't have been surprised, should have known, but... The carver said nothing more, waiting for another truth. So I offered up another shattered piece of me.
When Amarantha made me kill those two fairies, if the third hadn't been Tamlin, I would have put the dagger in my own heart at the end.
Reese went still.
"I knew there was no coming back from what I'd done," I said, wondering if the blue flame in the carver's eyes might burn my ruined soul to ash. "And once I broke their curse, once I knew I'd saved them, I just wanted enough time to turn that dagger on myself. I only decided I wanted to live when she killed me, and I knew I had not finished whatever it was I'd been born to do." I dared a glance at Reese, and there was something like devastation on his beautiful face. It was gone in a blink.
Even the bone carver said gently,
"With the cauldron, you could do other things than raise the dead. You could shatter the wall."
The only thing keeping human lambs, my family, safe from not just Highburn, but any other fairies.
"It is likely that Highburn has been quiet for so many years because he was hunting the cauldron, learning its secrets. Resurrection of a specific individual might very well have been his first test once the feet were reunited. And now he finds that the cauldron is pure energy, pure power. And like any magic, it can be depleted. So he will let it rest. Let it gather strength, learn its secrets to feed it more energy, more power."
"Is there a way to stop it?" I breathed.
Silence. Expectant, waiting silence. Reese's voice was hoarse as he said,
"Don't offer him one more."
"When the cauldron was made," the carver interrupted, "its dark maker used the last of the molten ore to forge a book, the Book of Breathings. In it, written between the carved words, are the spells to negate the cauldron's power, or to control it wholly. But after the war, it was split into two pieces. One went to the Fae, one to the six human queens. It was part of the treaty, purely symbolic, as the cauldron had been lost for millennia and considered mere myth. The book was believed harmless, because like calls to like, and only that which was made can speak those spells and summon its power. No creature born of earth may wield it, so the High Lords and humans dismissed it as little more than a historical heirloom. But if the book were in the hands of something reforged, you would have to test such a theory, of course. But it might be possible."
His eyes narrowed to amused slits as I realized.
"So now the High Lord of Summer possesses our peace,
and the reigning mortal queens have the other entombed in their shining palace by the sea. Prithian's hath is guarded, protected with blood spells keyed to Summer himself. The one belonging to the mortal queens? They were crafty when they received their gift. They used our own kind to spell the book, to bind it, so that if it were ever stolen, if, let's say, a high lord were to winnow into their castle to steal it, the book would melt into ore and be lost. It must be freely given by a mortal queen, with no trickery, no magic involved. A little laugh. Such clever, lovely creatures, humans. The carver seemed lost in ancient memory, then shook his head. Reunite both halves of the Book of Breathings, and you will be able to nullify the powers of the cauldron. Hopefully before it returns to full strength and shatters that wall. I didn't bother saying thank you, not with the information he'd told us, not when I'd been forced to say those things and could still feel Reese's lingering attention, as if he'd suspected but never believed just how badly I'd broken in that moment with Amarantha. We turned away, his hand sliding from my back to grip my hand. The touch was light, gentle, and I suddenly had no strength to even grip it back. The carver picked up the bone Rhysand had brought him and weighed it in those child's hands. I shall carve your death in here, Feyre. Up and up into the darkness we walked, through the sleeping stone and the monsters who dwelled within it. At last, I said to Rhys, what did you see?
You first.
A boy, around 8, dark-haired and blue-eyed. Rhys shuddered, the most human gesture I'd seen him make. What did you see? I pushed.
Jurian, Rhys said. He appeared exactly as Jurian looked the last time I saw him, facing Amarantha when they fought to the death. I didn't want to learn how the bone carver knew who we'd come to ask about.
Chapter 19.
Amran's right, Rhys drawled, leaning against the threshold of the townhouse sitting room.
You are like dogs waiting for me to come home.
Maybe I should buy treats. Cassian gave him a vulgar gesture from where he lounged on the couch before the hearth, an arm slung over the back behind Moore. Though everything about his powerful, muscled body suggested someone at ease, there was a tightness in his jaw, a coiled-up energy that told me they'd been waiting here for a while. Asriel lingered by the window, comfortably ensconced in shadows, a light flurry of snow dusting the lawn and street behind him. And Amran? Nowhere to be seen. I couldn't tell if I was relieved or not. I'd have to hunt her down to give her back the necklace soon, if Rhys's warnings and her own words were to be believed. Damp and cold from the mist and wind that chased us down from the prison, I strode for the armchair across from the couch, which had been shaped, like so much of the furniture here, to accommodate Illyrian wings. I stretched my stiff limbs toward the fire and stifled a groan at the delicious heat.
How'd it go? Moore said, straightening beside Cassian.
No gown today. Just practical black pants and a thick blue sweater.
The bone carver, Rhys said, is a busybody gossip who likes to pry into other people's business far too much.
But?
Cassian demanded, bracing his arms on his knees, wings tucked in tight.
But, Rhys said, he can also be helpful when he chooses, and it seems we need to start doing what we do best.
I flexed my numbed fingers, content to let them discuss, needing a moment to reel myself back in, to shut out what I'd revealed to the bone carver. And what the bone carver suggested I might actually be asked to do with that book, the abilities I might have. So Rhys told them of the cauldron, and the reason behind the temple pillagings, to no shortage of swearing and questions, and revealed nothing of what I had admitted in exchange for the information. Azrael emerged from his wreathing shadows to ask the most questions. His face and voice remained unreadable. Cassian, surprisingly, kept quiet, as if the general understood that the shadow singer would know what information was necessary and was busy assessing it for his own forces. When Rhys was done, his spymaster said,
"I'll contact my sources in the summer court about where the half of the Book of Breathings is hidden. I can fly into the human world myself to figure out where they're keeping their part of the book before we ask them for it."
"No need," Rhys said. "And I don't trust this information, even with your sources, with anyone outside of this room, save for Amran."
"They can be trusted," Azrael said with quiet steel,
his scarred hands clutching at his leather-clad sides.
"We're not taking risks where this is concerned," Rhys merely said.
He held Azrael's stare, and I could almost hear the silent words Rhys added.
"It is no judgment or reflection on you, Az. Not at all."
But Azrael yielded no tinge of emotion as he nodded, his hands unfurling.
"So what do you have planned?"
Moore cut in, perhaps for Az's sake. Rhys picked up an invisible piece of dirt off his fighting leathers. When he lifted his head, those violet eyes were glacial.
"The King of Highburn sacked one of our temples to get a missing piece of the cauldron. As far as I'm concerned, it's an act of war, an indication that His Majesty has no interest in wooing me."
"He likely remembers our allegiance to the humans in the war anyway," Cassian said. "He wouldn't jeopardize revealing his plans while trying to sway you, and I bet some of Amarantha's cronies reported to him about Under the Mountain, about how it ended, I mean."
Cassian's throat bobbed. "When Rhys had tried to kill her." I lowered my hands from the fire. Rhys said,
"Indeed. But this means Highburn's forces have already successfully infiltrated our lands without detection. I plan to return the favor."
Mother above. Cassian and Moore just grinned with feral delight.
"How?"
Moore asked. Rhys crossed his arms.
"It will require careful planning. But if the cauldron is in Highburn, then to Highburn we must go. Either to take it back, or to use the book to nullify it."
Some cowardly, pathetic part of me was already trembling.
"Highburn likely has as many wards and shields around it as we have here," Azrael countered. "We'd need to find a way to get through them undetected first."
A slight nod.
"Which is why we start now. Well, we hunt for the book. So when we get both halves, we can move swiftly, before word can spread that we even possess it."
Cassian nodded, but asked,
"How are you going to retrieve the book, then?"
I braced myself as Rhys said,
"Since these objects are spelled to the individual High Lords and can only be found by them, through their power, then, in addition to her uses regarding the handling of the Book of Breathings itself, it seems we possibly have our own detector."
Now they all looked at me. I cringed.
"Perhaps that was what the bone carver said in regard to me being able to track things. You don't know."
My words faded as Rhys smirked.
"You have a kernel of all our power, like having 7 thumbprints. If we've hidden something, if we've made or protected it with our power, no matter where it has been concealed, you will be able to track it through that very magic."
"You can't know that for sure,"
I tried again.
No, but there is a way to test it.
Reese was still smiling.
Here we go,
Cassian grumbled. Moore gave Azrael a warning glare to tell him not to volunteer this time. The spymaster just gave her an incredulous look in return. I might have lounged in my chair to watch their battle of wills had Reese not said, "With your abilities, Feyre, you might be able to find the half of the book at the summer court and break the wards around it. But I'm not going to take the Carver's word for it or bring you there without testing you first. To make sure that when it counts, when we need you to get that book, we do not fail. So we're going on another little trip to see if you can find a valuable object of mine that I've been missing for a considerably long time."
Shit,
Moore said, plunging her hands into the thick folds of her sweater. Where? I managed to say. It was Azrael who answered.
To the Weaver.
Reese held up a hand as Cassian opened his mouth. The test, he said, will be to see if Feyre can identify the object of mine in the Weaver's trove. When we get to the summer court, Tarquin might have spelled his half of the book to look different, feel different.
By the cauldron, Reese,
Moore snapped, setting both feet on the carpet.
Are you out of your...
Who is the Weaver? I pushed.
An ancient, wicked creature,
Azrael said, and I surveyed the faint scars on his wings, his neck, and wondered how many such things he'd encountered in his immortal life. If they were any worse than the people who shared blood ties with him.
Who should remain unbothered, he added in Reese's direction. Find another way to test her abilities.
Reese merely shrugged and looked to me. To let me choose, always. It was always my choice with him these days. Yet he hadn't let me go back to the Spring Court during those two visits, because he knew how badly I needed to get away from it. I gnawed on my lower lip, weighing the risks, waiting to feel any kernel of fear, of emotion. But this afternoon had drained any reserve of such things. The Bone Carver, the Weaver, can't you just ever call someone by a given name? Cassian chuckled, and Moore settled back in the sofa cushions. Only Reese, it seemed, understood that it hadn't entirely been a joke. His face was tight, like he knew precisely how tired I was, how I knew I should be quaking at the thought of this Weaver, but after the Bone Carver, what I'd revealed to it. I could feel nothing at all. Reese said to me,
"What about adding one more name to that list?"
I didn't particularly like the sound of that. Moore said as much.
Emissary, Rhysand said, ignoring his cousin. Emissary to the Night Court, for the human realm.
Azrael said,
There hasn't been one for 500 years, Rhys. There also hasn't been a human turned immortal since then either.
Rhys met my gaze.
The human world must be as prepared as we are, especially if the King of Highburn plans to shatter the wall and unleash his forces upon them. We need the other half of the book from those mortal queens, and if we can't use magic to influence them, then they're going to have to bring it to us.
More silence. On the street beyond the Bay of Windows, wisps of snow brushed past, dusting the cobblestones.
Reese jerked his chin at me. You are an immortal fairy with a human heart. Even as such, you might very well set foot on the continent and be hunted for it. So we set up a base in neutral territory, in a place where humans trust us. Trust you, Feyre. And where other humans might risk going to meet with you. To hear the voice of Prithian after 5 centuries.
My family's estate, I said.
Mother's tits, Reese,
Cassian cut in,
wings flaring wide enough to nearly knock over the ceramic vase on the side table next to him.
You think we can just take over her family's house? Demand that of them?
Nesta hadn't wanted any dealings with the Fae, and Elaine was so gentle, so sweet. How could I bring them into this?
The land, Moore said, reaching over to return the vase to its place, will run red with blood, Cassian, regardless of what we do with her family. It is now a matter of where that blood will flow, and how much will spill, how much human blood we can save.
And maybe it made me a cowardly fool, but I said, the Spring Court borders the wall.
The wall stretches across the sea, we'll fly in offshore, Rhys said, without so much as a blink. I won't risk discovery from any court, though word might spread quickly enough once we're there. I know it won't be easy, Farah, but if there's any way you could convince those queens—
I'll do it, I said.
Claire Better's broken and nailed body flashed in my vision. Amarantha had been one of his commanders, just one of many. The King of Highburn had to be horrible beyond reckoning to be her master. If these people got their hands on my sisters, they might not be happy about it, but I'll make Elaine and Nesta do it. I didn't have the nerve to ask Rhys if he could simply force my family to agree to help us if they refused. I wondered if his powers would work on Nesta when even Tamlin's glamour had failed against her steel mind.
Then it's settled, Rhys said. None of them looked particularly happy. Once Feyre, darling, returns from the Weaver, we'll bring Highburn to its knees.
Rhys and the others were gone that night. Where, no one told me. But after the events of the day, I barely finished devouring the food Nuala and Caradwyn brought to my room before I tumbled into sleep. I dreamed of a long white bone, carved with horrifying accuracy. My face, twisted in agony and despair, the ash knife in my hand, a pool of blood leaking away from two corpses. But I awoke to the watery light of winter dawn, my stomach full from the night before. A mere minute after I'd risen to consciousness, Rhys knocked on my door. I'd barely granted him permission to enter before he stalked inside like a midnight wind and chucked a belt hung with knives onto the foot of the bed.
Hurry, he said, flinging open the doors of the armoire and yanking out my fighting leathers.
He tossed them onto the bed, too.
I want to be gone before the sun is fully up.
Why? I said, pushing back the covers.
No wings today. Because time is of the essence.
He dug out my socks and boots.
Once the King of Highburn realizes that someone is searching for the Book of Breathings to nullify the powers of the cauldron, then his agents will begin hunting for it, too.
You suspected this for a while, though. I hadn't had the chance to discuss it with him last night. The cauldron, the king, the book? You wanted it confirmed, but you were waiting for me.
Had you agreed to work with me 2 months ago, I would have taken you right to the bone carver to see if he confirmed my suspicions about your talents. But things didn't go as planned.
No, they most certainly hadn't. The reading, I said, sliding my feet into fleece-lined, thick-soled slippers. That's why you insisted on the lessons. So if your suspicions were true and I could harness the book, I could actually read it, or any translation of whatever is inside.
A book that might very well be written in an entirely different language. A different alphabet. Again, he said, now striding for the dresser. Had you started to work with me, I would have told you why. I couldn't risk discovery otherwise.
He paused with a hand on the knob.
You should have learned to read no matter what. But yes, when I told you it served my own purposes, it was because of this. Do you blame me for it?
No, I said, and meant it. But I'd prefer to be notified of any future schemes.
Duly noted.
Rhys yanked open the drawers and pulled out my undergarments. He dangled the bits of midnight lace and chuckled.
I'm surprised you didn't demand Nuala and Caradwyn buy you something else.
I stalked to him, snatching the lace away. You're drooling on the carpet. I slammed the bathing room door before he could respond. He was waiting as I emerged, already warm within the fur-lined leather. He held up the belt of knives, and I studied the loops and straps.
No swords, no bow or arrows, he said.
He'd worn his own Illyrian fighting leathers, that simple, brutal sword strapped down his spine.
But knives are fine?
Rhys knelt and spread a wide web of leather and steel, beckoning for me to stick a leg through one loop. I did as instructed, ignoring the brush of his steady hands on my thighs as I stepped through the other loop, and he began tightening and buckling things.
She will not notice a knife, as she has knives in her cottage for eating and her work. But things that are out of place, objects that have not been there, a sword, a bow and arrow, she might sense those things.
What about me? He tightened a strap. Strong, capable hands. So at odds with the finery he usually wore to dazzle the rest of the world into thinking he was something else entirely.
Do not make a sound. Do not touch anything but the object she took from me.
Rhys looked up, hands braced on my thighs.
Bow, he'd once ordered Tamlin.
And now, here he was, on his knees before me. His eyes glinted as if he remembered it too. Had that been a part of his game? That facade? Or had it been vengeance for the horrible blood feud between them?
If we're correct about your powers, he said, if the bone carver wasn't lying to us, then you and the object will have the same imprint, thanks to the preserving spells I placed on it long ago. You are one and the same. She will not notice your presence so long as you touch only it. You will be invisible to her.
She's blind.
A nod. But her other senses are lethal. So be quick and quiet. Find the object and run out, Feyre.
His eyes lingered on my legs, wrapping around the back of them. And if she notices me? His hands tightened slightly.
Then we'll learn precisely how skilled you are. Cruel, conniving bastard. I glared at him. Rhys shrugged. Would you rather I locked you in the House of Wind and stuffed you with food and made you wear fine clothes and plan my parties?
Go to hell. Why not get this object yourself if it's so important?
Because the Weaver knows me. And if I am caught, there would be a steep price. High lords are not to interfere with her, no matter the direness of the situation. There are many treasures in her hoard, some she has kept for millennia. Most will never be retrieved, because the high lords do not dare be caught, thanks to the laws that protect her, thanks to her wrath. Any thieves on their behalf, either they do not return, or they are never sent, for fear of it leading back to their high lord. But you? She does not know you. You belong to every court.
So I'm your huntress and thief? His hand slid down to cup the backs of my knees, as he said with a roguish grin,
You are my salvation, Feyre.
Chapter 20 Rhys and winnowed us into a wood that was older, more aware than any place I'd been. The gnarled beech trees were tightly woven together, splattered and draped so thoroughly with moss and lichen that it was nearly impossible to see the bark beneath.
Where are we?
I breathed, hardly daring to whisper. Rhys kept his hands within casual reach of his weapons. In the heart of Prithian, there is a large empty territory that divides the north and south. At the center of it is our sacred mountain. My heart stumbled, and I focused on my steps through the ferns and moss and roots. This forest, Rhys went on, is on the eastern edge of that neutral territory. Here there is no High Lord. Here the law is made by who is strongest, meanest, most cunning. And the Weaver of the Wood is at the top of their food chain.
The trees groaned, though there was no breeze to shift them. No, the air here was tight and stale. Amarantha didn't wipe them out?
Amarantha was no fool, Rhys said, his face dark. She did not touch these creatures or disturb the wood. For years, I tried to find ways to manipulate her to make that foolish mistake, but she never bought it.
And now we're disturbing her for a mere test. He chuckled, the sound bouncing off the gray stones strewn across the forest floor like scattered marbles.
Cassian tried to convince me last night not to take you. I thought he might even punch me.
Why?
I barely knew him. Who knows? With Cassian, he's probably more interested in fucking you than protecting you.
Ugh, you're a pig.
You could, you know, Rhys said, holding up the branch of a scrawny beech for me to slip under. If you needed to move on in a physical sense, I'm sure Cassian would be more than happy to oblige.
It felt like a test in itself. And it pissed me off enough that I crooned, "Then tell him to come to my room tonight."
If you survive this test. I paused atop a little lichen-crusted rock.
You seem pleased by the idea that I won't.
Quite the opposite, Farah.
He prowled to where I stood on the stone. I was almost eye level with him. The forest went even quieter, the trees seeming to lean closer, as if to catch every word.
I'll let Cassian know you're open to his advances.
Good, I said. A bit of hollowed-out air pushed against me, like a flicker of night. That power along my bones and blood stirred in answer. I made to jump off the stone, but he gripped my chin, the movement too fast to detect. His words were a lethal caress as he said,
"Did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you?"
I knew he could hear my heart as it ratcheted into a thunderous beat. I gave him a hateful little smirk anyway, yanking my chin out of his touch and leaping off the stone. I might have aimed for his feet, and he might have shifted out of the way just enough to avoid it.
Isn't that all you males are good for, anyway?
But the words were tight, near breathless. His answering smile evoked silken sheets and jasmine-scented breezes at midnight. A dangerous line. One Rhys was forcing me to walk to keep from thinking about what I was to face, about what a wreck I was inside. Anger, this flirtation, annoyance. He knew those were my crutches. What I was about to encounter, then, must be truly harrowing if he wanted me to go in there mad, thinking about sex, about anything but the Weaver of the Wood.
Nice try, I said hoarsely.
Rhysand just shrugged and swaggered off into the trees ahead. Bastard. Yes, it had been to distract me, but... I stormed after him as silently as I could, intent on tackling him and slamming my fist into his spine, but he held up a hand as he stopped before a clearing. A small, whitewashed cottage with a thatched roof and half-crumbling chimney sat in the center. Ordinary. Almost mortal.
There was even a well, its bucket perched on the stone lip, and a wood pile beneath one of the round windows of the cottage. No sound or light within. Not even smoke puffed from the chimney. The few birds in the forest fell quiet. Not entirely, but to keep their chatter to a minimum. And there. Faint, coming from inside the cottage, was a pretty steady humming. It might have been the sort of place I would have stopped if I were thirsty or hungry or in need of shelter for the night. Maybe that was the trap. The trees around the clearing, so close their branches nearly clawed at the thatched roof, might very well have been the bars of a cage. Rhys inclined his head toward the cottage, bowing with dramatic grace. In, out. Don't make a sound. Find whatever object it was and snatch it from beneath a blind person's nose. And then run like hell. Mossy earth paved the way to the front door, already cracked slightly. A bit of cheese. I was the foolish mouse about to fall for it. Eyes twinkling, Rhys mouthed, "Good luck." I gave him a vulgar gesture and slowly, silently made my way toward the front door. The woods seemed to monitor each of my steps. When I glanced behind, Rhys was gone. He hadn't said if he'd interfere if I were in mortal peril. I probably should have asked. I avoided any leaves and stones, falling into a pattern of movement that some part of my body, some part that was not born of the High Lords, remembered. Like waking up, that's what it felt like. I passed the well. Not a speck of dirt, not a stone out of place. A perfect, pretty trap, that mortal part of me warned. A trap designed from a time when humans were prey, now laid for a smarter, immortal sort of game. I was not prey any longer, I decided, as I eased up to that door. And I was not a mouse. I was a wolf. I listened on the threshold, the rock worn as if many, many boots had passed through, and perhaps never passed back over again. The words of her song became clear now, her voice sweet and beautiful, like sunlight on a stream.
There were two sisters, they went playing, to see their father's ships come sailing, and when they came unto the sea brim, the elder did push the younger in. A honeyed voice for an ancient, horrible song. I'd heard it before, slightly different, but sung by humans who had no idea that it had come from fairy throats. I listened for another moment, trying to hear anyone else, but there was only a clatter and thrum of some sort of device and the weaver's song.
Sometimes she sank and sometimes she swam, till her corpse came to the miller's dam.
My breath was tight in my chest, but I kept it even, directing it through my mouth in silent breaths. I eased open the front door, just an inch. No squeak, no whine of rusty hinges, another piece of the pretty trap, practically inviting thieves in. I peered inside when the door had opened wide enough. A large main room with a small shut door in the back. Floor-to-ceiling shelves lined the walls, crammed with bric-a-brac. Books, shells, dolls, herbs, pottery, shoes, crystals, more books, jewels. From the ceiling and wood rafters hung all manner of chains, dead birds, dresses, ribbons, gnarled bits of wood, strands of pearls. A junk shop of some immortal hoarder. And that hoarder,
In the gloom of the cottage, there sat a large spinning wheel, cracked and dulled with age. And before that ancient spinning wheel, her back to me, sat the weaver. Her thick hair was of richest onyx, tumbling down to her slender waist as she worked the wheel, snow-white hands feeding and pulling the thread around a thorn-sharp spindle. She looked young, her gray gown simple but elegant, sparkling faintly in the dim forest light through the windows as she sang in a voice of glittering gold.
But what did he do with her breastbone? He made him a viol to play on. What did he do with her finger so small? He made pegs too his viol withal.
The fiber she fed into the wheel was white, soft, like wool. But I knew, in that lingering human part of me, it was not wool. I knew that I did not want to learn what creature it had come from, who she was spinning into thread. Because on the shelf directly beyond her were cones upon cones of threads, of every color and texture. And on the shelf adjacent to her were swaths and yards of that woven thread. Woven, I realized, on the massive loom nearly hidden in the darkness near the hearth. The weaver's loom. I had come on spinning day. Would she have been singing if I had come on weaving day instead? From the strange, fear-drenched scent that came from those bolts of fabric, I already knew the answer. A wolf. I was a wolf. I stepped into the cottage, careful of the scattered debris on the earthen floor. She kept working, the wheel clattering so merrily, so at odds with her horrible song.
And what did he do with her nose ridge? Unto his viol he made a bridge. What did he do with her veins so blue? He made strings to his viol thereto.
I scanned the room, trying not to listen to the lyrics. Nothing. I felt nothing that might pull me toward one object in particular. Perhaps it would be a blessing if I were indeed not the one to track the book. If today was not the start of what was sure to be a slew of miseries. The weaver perched there, working. I scanned the shelves, the ceiling. Borrowed time. I was on borrowed time, and I was almost out of it. Had Reese sent me on a fool's errand? Maybe there was nothing here. Maybe this object had been taken. It would be just like him to do that. To tease me in the woods, to see what sort of things might make my body react. And maybe I resented Tamlin enough in that moment to enjoy that deadly bit of flirtation. Maybe I was as much a monster as the female spinning before me. But if I was a monster, then I supposed Reese was as well. Reese and I were one and the same, beyond the power that he'd given me. It'd be fitting if Tamlin hated me too, once he realized I'd truly left. I felt it then, like a tap on my shoulder. I pivoted, keeping one eye on the weaver and the other on the room as I wove through the maze of tables and junk, like a beacon. A bit of light laced with his half-smile, it tugged me. Hello, it seemed to say. Have you come to claim me at last? Yes, yes, I wanted to say, even as a part of me wished it were otherwise. The weaver sang behind me.
What did he do with her eyes so bright? On his viol he set a first light. What did he do with her tongue so rough? 'Twill the new till, and it spoke enough.
I followed that pulse, toward the shelf lining the wall beside the hearth. Nothing, and nothing on the second, but the third, right above my eyeline. There. I could almost smell his salt and citrus scent. The bone carver had been correct. I rose on my toes to examine the shelf. an old letter knife, books in leather that I did not want to touch or smell, a handful of acorns, a tarnished crown of ruby and jasper, and
a ring. A ring of twisted strands of gold and silver, flecked with pearl, and set with a stone of deepest solid blue. Sapphire, but different. I'd never seen a sapphire like that, even at my father's offices.
This one, I could have sworn that in the pale light, the lines of a six-pointed star radiated across the round, opaque surface.
Rhys. This had Rhys written all over it.
He'd sent me here for a ring?
The weaver sang,
"Then bespake the treble string, oh, yonder is my father the king."
I watched her for another heartbeat, gauging the distance between the shelf and the open door.
Grabbed the ring, and I could be gone in a heartbeat. Quick, quiet, calm.
"Then bespake the second string, oh, yonder sits my mother the queen."
I dropped a hand toward one of the knives strapped to my thighs. When I got back to Rhys, maybe I'd stab him in the gut. That fast, the memory of phantom blood covered my hands. I knew how it'd feel to slide my dagger through his skin and bones and flesh. Knew how the blood would dribble out. How he'd groan in pain. I shut out the thought, even as I could feel the blood of those fairies soaking that human part of me that hadn't died and belonged to no one but my miserable self.
"Then bespake the strings all three, yonder is my sister that drowned me."
My hand was quiet as a final dying breath as I plucked the ring from the shelf. The weaver stopped singing. Chapter 21. I froze, the ring now in the pocket of my jacket. She'd finished the last song.
Maybe she'd start another. Maybe. The spinning wheel slowed.
I backed a step toward the door, then another. Slower and slower, each rotation of the ancient wheel longer than the last. Only 10 steps to the door. 5. The wheel went round one last time, so slow I could see each of the spokes. 2. I turned for the door as she lashed out with a white hand, gripping the wheel and stopping it wholly. The door before me snicked shut. I lunged for the handle, but there was none. Window. Get to the window.
"Who is in my house?"
she said softly. Fear, undiluted, unbroken fear slammed into me, and I remembered. I remembered what it was to be human and helpless and weak. I remembered what it was to want to fight to live, to be willing to do anything to stay breathing. I reached the window beside the door, sealed. No latch, no opening. Just glass that was not glass, solid and impenetrable. The weaver turned her face toward me. Wolf or mouse, it made no difference because I became no more than an animal, sizing up my chance of survival. Above her young, supple body, beneath her black, beautiful hair, her skin was gray. Wrinkled and sagging and dry. And where her eyes should have gleamed, instead lay rotting black pits. Her lips had withered to nothing but deep, dark lines around a hole full of jagged stumps of teeth, like she had gnawed on too many bones. And I knew she would be gnawing on my bones soon if I did not get out. Her nose, perhaps once pert and pretty, now half caved in, flared as she sniffed in my direction.
"Who are you?"
she said in a voice that was so young and lovely. "Out, out, I had to get out,"
There was another way.
One suicidal, reckless way. I did not want to die. I did not want to be eaten. I did not want to go into that sweet darkness.
The weaver rose from her little stool, and I knew my borrowed time had run out.
What is like all?
She mused, taking one graceful step toward me.
But unlike all.
I was a wolf, and I bit when cornered. I lunged for the sole candle burning on the table in the center of the room and hurled it against the wall of woven thread, against all those miserable dark bolts of fabric. Woven bodies, skins, lives. Let them be free. Fire erupted, and the weaver's shriek was so piercing I thought my head might shatter, thought my blood might boil in its veins. She dashed for the flames, as if she'd put them out with those flawless white hands, and her mouth of rotted teeth open and screaming like there was nothing but black hell inside her. I hurtled for the darkened hearth, for the fireplace and the chimney above. A tight squeeze, but wide enough for me. I didn't hesitate as I grabbed onto the ledge and hauled myself up, arms buckling. Immortal strength. It only got me so far, and I'd become so weak, so malnourished. I had let them make me weak, bent to it like some wild horse broken to the bit. The soot-stained bricks were loose, uneven, perfect for climbing. Faster, I had to go faster. But my shoulders scraped against the brick, and it reeked in here, like carrion and burned hair. And there was an oily sheen on the stone like cooked fat. The weaver's screaming was cut short as I was halfway up her chimney, sunlight and trees almost visible, every breath a near sob. I reached for the next brick, fingernails breaking as I hauled myself up so violently that my arms barked in protest against the squeezing of the stone around me, and I was stuck. Stuck. As the weaver hissed from within her house. What little mouse is climbing about in my chimney? I had just enough room to look down as the weaver's rotted face appeared below. She put that milk-white hand on the ledge, and I realized how little room there was between us. My head emptied out. I pushed against the grip of the chimney but couldn't budge. I was going to die here. I was going to be dragged down by those beautiful hands and ripped apart and eaten. Maybe while I was still alive, she'd set that hideous mouth on my flesh and gnaw and tear and bite and... Black panic crushed in, and I was again trapped under a nearby mountain in a muddy trench, the Midgard worm barreling for me. I'd barely escaped, barely. I couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe. The weaver's nails scratched against the brick as she took a step up. No, 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 no. I kicked and kicked against the bricks. Did you think you could steal and flee, thief? I would have preferred the Midgard worm, would have preferred those massive, sharp teeth to her jagged stumps. Stop. The word came out of the darkness of my mind. And the voice was my own. Stop, it said. I said. Breathe. Think. The weaver came closer, brick crumbling under her hands. She'd climb up like a spider, like I was a fly in her web. Stop. And that word quieted everything. I mouthed it. Stop, stop, stop. Think. I had survived the worm, survived Amarantha, and I had been granted gifts, considerable gifts, like strength. I was strong. I slammed a hand against the chimney wall as low as I could get. The weaver hissed at the debris that rained down.
I smashed my fist again, rallying that strength. I was not a pet, not a doll, not an animal. I was a survivor, and I was strong. I would not be weak or helpless again. I would not, could not be broken, tamed. I pounded my fist into the bricks over and over, and the weaver paused. Paused long enough for the brick I'd loosened to slide free into my waiting palm, and for me to hurl it at her hideous, horrible face as hard as I could. Bone crunched and she roared, black blood spraying. But I rammed my shoulders into the sides of the chimney, skin tearing beneath my leather. I kept going, going, going until I was stone breaking stone, until nothing and no one held me back and I was scaling the chimney. I didn't dare stop, not as I reached the lip and hauled myself out, tumbling onto the thatched roof, which was not thatched with hay at all, but hair. And with all that fat lining the chimney, all that fat now gleaming on my skin, the hair clung to me, in clumps and strands and tufts. Bile rose, but the front door banged open, a shriek following it. No, not that way, not to the ground. Up, up, up. A tree branch hung low and close by, and I scrambled across that heinous roof, trying not to think about who and what I was stepping on, what clung to my skin, my clothes. A heartbeat later, I jumped onto the waiting branch, scrambling into the leaves and moss as the weaver screamed, "Where are you?" But I was running through the tree, running toward another one nearby. I leaped from branch to branch, bare hands tearing on the wood. Where was Rhysand? Farther and farther I fled, her screams chasing me, though they grew ever distant.
Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?
And then, lounging on a branch in a tree before me, one arm draped over the edge, Rhysand drawled, "What the hell did you do?" I skidded to a stop, breathing raw. I thought my lungs might actually be bleeding. "You," I hissed. But he raised a finger to his lips and winnowed to me, grabbing my waist with one hand and cupping the back of my neck with his other as he spirited us away to Valaris, to just above the House of Wind. We free fell, and I didn't have breath to scream as his wings appeared, spreading wide, and he curved us into a steady glide, right through the open windows of what had to be a war room. Cassian was there, in the middle of arguing with Amryn about something. Both froze as we landed on the red floor. There was a mirror on the wall behind them, and I glimpsed myself long enough to know why they were gaping. My face was scratched and bloody, and I was covered in dirt and grease, boiled fat, and mortar dust. The hair stuck to me, and I smelled.
"You smell like barbecue," Amryn said, cringing a bit.
Cassian loosened the hand he'd wrapped around the fighting knife at his thigh. I was still panting, still trying to gobble down breath. The hair clinging to me scratched and tickled and...
"You kill her?" Cassian said.
"No," Rhys answered for me, loosely folding his wings.
"But given how much the weaver was screaming, I'm dying to know what Feyre Darling did."
Grease. I had the grease and hair of people on me. I vomited all over the floor. Cassian swore, but Amryn waved a hand and it was instantly gone, along with the mess on me. But I could feel the ghost of it there, the remnants of people, the mortar of those bricks. "She detected me somehow," I managed to say, slumping against the large black table and wiping my mouth against the shoulder of my leather. "And locked the doors and windows,
so I had to climb out through the chimney. I got stuck, I added as Cassian's brows rose, and when she tried to climb up, I threw a brick at her face.
Silence. Amryn looked to Rhysand.
And where were you?
Waiting, far enough away that she couldn't detect me.
I snarled at him.
I could have used some help.
You survived, he said, and found a way to help yourself. From the hard glimmer in his eye, I knew he was aware of the panic that had almost gotten me killed, either through mental shields I'd forgotten to raise or whatever anomaly in our bond. He'd been aware of it and let me endure it. Because it had almost gotten me killed, and I'd be no use to him if it had happened when it mattered, with the book. Exactly like he'd said.
That's what this was also about, I spat. Not just this stupid ring.
I reached into my pocket, slamming the ring down on the table.
Or my abilities, but if I can master my panic.
Cassian swore again, his eyes on that ring. Amryn shook her head, sheet of dark hair swaying.
Brutal, but effective.
Rhys only said, Now you know that you can use your abilities to hunt your objects and thus track the book at the summer court and master yourself.
You're a prick, Rhysand, Cassian said quietly.
Rhys merely tucked his wings in with a graceful snap.
You'd do the same.
Cassian shrugged, as if to say, fine, he would. I looked at my hands, my nails bloody and cracked, and I said to Cassian, I want you to teach me how to fight, to get strong, if the offer to train still stands. Cassian's brows rose, and he didn't bother looking to Rhys for approval.
You'll be calling me a prick pretty damn fast if we train. And I don't know anything about training humans, how breakable your bodies are. Were, I mean, he added with a wince. We'll figure it out.
I don't want my only option to be running, I said.
Running, Amryn cut in, kept you alive today.
I ignored her.
I want to know how to fight my way out. I don't want to have to wait on anyone to rescue me.
I faced Rhys, crossing my arms.
Well, have I proved myself?
But he merely picked up the ring and gave me a nod of thanks. It was my mother's ring. As if that were all the explanation and answers owed.
How'd you lose it? I demanded.
I didn't. My mother gave it to me as a keepsake, then took it back when I reached maturity, and gave it to the weaver for safekeeping.
Why?
So I wouldn't waste it.
Nonsense, an idiocy, and
I wanted a bath. I wanted quiet and a bath. The need for those things hit me strong enough that my knees buckled. I'd barely looked at Rhys before he grabbed my hand, flared his wings, and had us soaring back through the windows. We free fell for 5 thunderous, wild heartbeats before he winnowed to my bedroom in the townhouse. A hot bath was already running. I staggered to it, exhaustion hitting me like a physical blow, when Rhys said,
And what about training your other gifts?
Through the rising steam from the tub, I said,
I think you and I would shred each other to bits.
Oh, we most definitely will.
He leaned against the bathing room threshold.
But it wouldn't be fun otherwise.
Consider our training now officially part of your work requirements with me. A jerk of the chin. Go ahead. Try to get past my shields. I knew which ones he was talking about.
I'm tired. The bath will go cold.
I promise it'll be just as hot in a few moments.
or if you mastered your gifts, you might be able to take care of that yourself.
I frowned, but took a step toward him, then another, making him yield a step, two, into the bedroom. The phantom grease and hair clung to me, reminded me what he'd done. I held his stare, those violet eyes twinkling.
You feel it, don't you?
He said over the burbling and chittering garden birds. Your power, stalking under your skin, purring in your ear. So what if I do? A shrug.
I'm surprised Dianthe didn't carve you up on an altar to see what that power looks like inside you.
What precisely is your issue with her?
I find the High Priestesses to be a perversion of what they once were. Once promised to be. Dianthe among the worst of them.
A knot twisted in my stomach. Why do you say that?
Get past my shields and I'll show you.
So that explained the turn in conversation, a taunt, bait. Holding his stare, I let myself fall for it. I let myself imagine that line between us, a bit of braided light, and there was his mental shield at the other end of the bond, black and solid and impenetrable. No way in. However I'd slipped through before, I had no idea. I've had enough tests for the day. Rhys crossed the 2 feet between us.
The High Priestesses have burrowed into a few of the courts, dawn, day, and winter mostly. They've entrenched themselves so thoroughly that their spies are everywhere, their followers near fanatic with devotion, and yet, during those 50 years, they escaped. They remained hidden. I would not be surprised if Dianthe sought to establish a foothold in the Spring Court.
You mean to tell me they're all black-hearted villains?
No. Some, yes. Some are compassionate and selfless and wise, but there are some who are merely self-righteous, though those are the ones that always seem the most dangerous to me.
And Dianthe? A knowing sparkle in his eyes. He really wouldn't tell me. He'd dangle it before me like a piece of meat. I lunged, blindly, wildly, but I sent my power lashing down that line between us, and yelped as it slammed against his inner shields, the reverberations echoing in me as surely as if I'd hit something with my body. Rhys chuckled, and I saw fire.
Admirable. Sloppy, but an admirable attempt.
Panting a bit, I seethed. But he said, just for trying, and took my hand in his. The bond went taut, that thing under my skin pulsing, and there was dark, and the colossal sense of him on the other side of his mental barricade of black adamant. That shield went on forever. The product of half a millennia of being hunted, attacked, hated. I brushed a mental hand against that wall. Like a mountain cat, arching into a touch, it seemed to purr, and then relaxed its guard. His mind opened for me. An antechamber, at least. A single space he'd carved out, to allow me to see. A bedroom carved from obsidian. A mammoth bed of ebony sheets, large enough to accommodate wings. And on it, sprawled in nothing but her skin, lay Dianthe. I reeled back, realizing it was a memory and Dianthe was in his bed, in his court beneath that mountain, her full breasts peaked against the chill.
There is more. Rhys's voice said from far away as I struggled to pull out.
But my mind slammed into the shield, the other side of it. He'd trapped me in here.
You kept me waiting,
Ianthe sulked.
The sensation of hard, carved wood digging into my